Welcome back, everybody. Back here with Brian, and you know, we're talking, man, we're talking everything from tournament bass fishing to detail sonar. A lot of great questions. Keep the questions coming, guys. If you guys are just tuning in, come on over and subscribe to Bassu TV if you're watching us over on Facebook. All of our subscribers can instant message us questions. We're giving all these prizes away to our subscribers. And we're giving away extra time over there on the IM board. So come on over. We're hooking you guys up, extending your subscription with Bassu TV by 30 days. So come on, come on over and subscribe. If you are currently on Facebook and watching us, we love you guys too, even though you don't come over and subscribe, but we want you to like it, share it, push it out there. We're going to put you guys in a contest to win a $97 prize pack of TH products, including a G-Force handle.
Oh yeah.
Some culling gear and a lot of great stuff that we're going to be giving out to you guys too, but a lot more stuff to our subscribers. Come on over and get subscribed. But right now it's 30 days free, by the way. And we are talking about a lot of really cool stuff. And thanks again to Ken Duke, a fishing tackle retailer, for hooking us up with a trivia question that Rick Klun has won on Gunnersville twice. And me and Brian Thrift were stumped on that. Yeah. I feel pretty stupid.
We went with Jay Yeller.
Yeah.
We were both stuck on Jay.
Yeah. So. I mean, that was a good guess, right?
I feel like it's a very good guess.
Yeah. He's an old-timer. Been doing that thing for a long time. And he's won a lot.
He has.
Jay's won a ton of tournaments. And
just a reminder, we have a few more of these trivia questions and some great prizes, but you guys, please don't guess.
Well, come on. It's fun.
He started it, so I'm off the hook
on that. We have plenty of people on the message board.
I just seconded his guess.
Plenty of people on the board that will want to chime in when we get to them. Yeah, and I'm going to throw some shout-outs out here if we got a minute. Shout-outs go out to everybody that's watching with us on the board and on Facebook. We appreciate all you guys kind of evenly. We wish you'd be on Bassu TV with us. But on Bassu TV, we got New York Chris, Two Wheel Cowboy, Eric J., Michael, Tom, Walter, Bob Goodman, Mike O, Showtime 99, Randall, Warren, J Mac, Triton, Dave Hall, Bill, MC, Adam L, Justin, Biohazard, Kane Simpson Fishing. The list goes on. Appreciate you guys being with us.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. If we didn't get to your question, we're sorry. We're going to try to get to as many of them as we can. So keep them coming in. And we're going to be hooking you guys up for sure. And we got a lot more fun to have here.
Shout out to Kane for making those awesome edits.
Thank you, Kane.
Yeah. That one of Brian running with
the Forrest Gump.
Yeah. That's so damn good. And the song was so perfect.
I love that. I love that too. But I
have a lot of those hook sets. It's kind of weird. Like, I watch like videos you watch everybody, all the other professionals, and you know, they've got good, flawless mechanics, and I'm like all over the place.
Is that a Carolina? Is that a Carolina rig hook set?
No, that was a jig.
That was a jig?
That was a jig.
With that running start?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm always like out of position or something weird's going on.
It had to be a long, really long cast.
It was a pretty long cast. Yeah. I mean, but.
Yeah, you wound up in the back of the deck.
I mean, I got a video. We were shooting at Clear Lake the first year we ever went there. And I tried to find it the other day. I don't know. It's one on one of my vlogs on YouTube. But I set the hook on an offshore fish on a jig. And, like, I ended up with my rod way behind my head, and it slapped me in the back of the head. Like, when I stuck him, the fish pulled it back, and it went, bap, smacked me in the back of the head. Perfect.
Did you ever see Ike with a spinning rod hook set? How he ends up with the rod around his head.
I do the same thing. Yeah. Like, I'm glad I'm not the only one. But like, I watch all the other professional anglers, and they just look all smooth and flawless. And here I am running the back deck. And as long as they get in the boat, it don't matter.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you panic like when you get a bite? Does it shock you or?
No, it doesn't. I don't get panicked. It's just, I don't know if I get excited and I don't reel up enough slack a lot of times, and I got to take up the extra slack by running to the back deck, but
it works.
It works.
Yeah, I'd say it works. It works pretty good.
Yeah.
You ought to keep doing what you're doing, man.
I'm not going to change it.
And we'll keep making fun of you.
There you go.
It's mostly jokes.
I make fun of myself. So. It's good.
That's cool. Well, you just, speaking of winning, you know, you've won. Your most recent tournament was an FLW Tour event on Lake Cumberland.
Yep, last year.
Which is in Kentucky. And that, by all accounts, well, I fished it. I fished an FLW out there a few years back, and it's a tricky place to fish.
It is, but it's fun. Like, there's a lot of fish in Lake Cumberland. And I actually won it on a finesse swim bait, and the lake was high and flooded and dirty, and everybody was thrashing them on a spinner bait. And then I'm out here winding a little 3-inch Damiki swim bait around and win the tournament on smallmouth. So it was pretty cool.
I'd say that's pretty cool. Because was it an 18-inch limit? Is it always an 18-inch limit?
Well, the first year we went, I finished 12th, and there was an 18-inch limit on smallmouth. Mm-hmm. And this year, or last year when we were there, they just did a straight 15-inch. We got an exemption for the smallmouth where we could weigh in, you know, 15-inch or bigger smallmouth.
Okay.
Which it really didn't affect anything. I mean, I don't know if I had 5 18-inchers every day, but I would like to think if I didn't, I was real close to having 5 every day. So it was.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was very
big,
fun.
Catching big, small. Everybody else is burning the banks, catching shallow fish.
Catching largemouth and smallmouth both on spinner baits. And I mean, I was still fishing the bank. I was just throwing a swim bait.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Okay. Well, tell us about it. I mean, this is a Damiki swim bait.
Yeah,
finesse swim bait.
Yeah, this is actually the 4-inch when I was throwing the 3-inch at Cumberland last year. This just came out a couple of months ago, so I didn't have this one last year at the Cumberland event, but it's just a 4-inch Damiki armor shad. We've got the 3-inch Damiki armor shad, and it's just a great all-around swim bait, especially for like finesse swim baits. It doesn't have a real aggressive kick, but it's got a very good kick. And the whole key to a finesse swim bait is you want it soft enough that you can crawl it slow and still have that bait swim. There's a lot of swim baits out there, the plastic's too hard, and they just won't swim when you slow the bait down and really fish it like you need to. And one way you can tell is when you buy a swim bait, just hold it up and see if that tail flops over like that. Make sure that plastic's soft. That's going to give you a good action on a slow retrieve, and that tail's going to kick hard when the bait's actually falling. And to me, that's been the whole key, is just having a good, soft swim bait like this Damiki armor shad.
Well, now, you were using a 3-inch.
Yep.
You're fishing the bank with it. Are you exposed hooking it? How are you rigging that?
I'm rigging it on a jig head. It's a Damiki jig head, and just exposed hook. I break off a lot, you know. I go through 20 or 25 jig heads a day. But you don't lose them, you don't miss them.
Right.
So I feel like the trade-off's worth it. Like, yeah, I might lose $10 worth of jig heads, but we'll catch $125,000 worth of fish, so it's all right.
That's a good trick. I take that trick.
Yeah, good trick.
So now you're breaking it off because are you throwing it at wood? Are you throwing it at
docks? Like, just fishing. Well, like I was at Cumberland, I was fishing the bank, and like I always let my swim bait hit the bottom when I fish the bank. Like, my first initial cast, it'll land, you know, 2 or 3 feet off the bank, and I let it hit the bottom and then start crawling. So sometimes you throw up there and it lands in a rock crevice or lands in a piece of wood or something like that. I mean, so you just, it's the nature of the beast. You're going to break off occasionally, get hung, but you just tie another one on and go at it.
So they were, these big smallmouth were just up in that, you know, flooded bank?
Yeah, they were just right up there, you know, in 3 to 6 feet of water. And like, it was so cool because I was throwing it on a 3/16 ounce head on 8-pound P-line fluorocarbon, the tactical fluorocarbon, and 90% of the bites would get it on the fall in like 3 or 4 feet of water. Like, you'd fire your bait out there and it'd hit the bottom and you'd turn the reel handle one time and line be swimming down the bank.
Man, that's awesome.
It was fun.
Now you were able to like go behind guys and catch them.
I feel like I was. I mean, I never like seen somebody 100 yards down the bank and pulled in right behind them to test the theory.
Right,
but
right.
In my mind, that's what I was doing.
Well, what were they doing? Was that a spawn, a post-spawn?
They were pre-spawn. They pre-spawn. Were just pulling up, getting ready to spawn.
Wow.
So it was like the perfect storm. I mean, it was one of the most phenomenal bites I've seen. I mean, as far as anything, I mean, you could go down the bank, throw a spinnerbait and catch a pile of fish. You could just kind of pick your poison. And even the fourth day of the event, I know we talked about fishing the conditions earlier tonight. The fourth day, we started out and it was storming, windy, rainy, and I couldn't feel my swim bait with that light line and that light head. So I fished for like 20 minutes and didn't get a bite. And I was like, man, I need to do something. So I picked up a spinnerbait and caught 15 pounds in 20 minutes. The wind laid down. I coiled them all on my swim bait. So, but I had a decent limit, and I was calmed down enough to fish.
Right. So, yep. Well, you said you're using 8-pound fluorocarbon. Is that direct? Or are you?
Yeah, this straight fluorocarbon on a bait caster. And that's something that I see a lot of people throw the finesse swim baits on spinning gear.
Mm-hmm.
And I would rather throw it on a bait caster because I can control my depth so much better, mm-hmm. so much easier. And I can actually cast it farther on a bait caster than I can a spinning rod. So I just love doing that. And the whole key to it is getting a reel and a rod that you can fish that light line on a bait caster. I use a Revo MGX Extreme reel. The ALF is another good reel Abu makes. But you want a low profile, shallow spool reel with a good smooth drag that you can fish that 8 and 10 pound line on a bait caster and not break those fish off. And you know, rod's a huge component of it. I use a 7-foot medium heavy Fitzgerald Stunner rod. It's got a good soft tip. You can play those fish. And if you go back and watch some of the videos from that Cumberland tournament I won, you can actually hear me clicking the button on my reel while I'm fighting fish. I rarely use the drag when I'm using light line on a bait caster. If that fish gets to the boat and he dives and, you know, he's tightening that line up and putting pressure on it, I'll push the button in, thumb the spool, let him swim out till he gets tired of swimming, click the reel back in gear and wind him in.
I see a lot of guys doing that.
Yeah, to me, that's, I can determine how much pressure I put on that fish.
Right.
So,
right.
That's something I've done that for a while now, probably the last 5 or 6 years. And I think it not only helps you with light line, but even bigger line, because all too often you skin hook a big fish and you don't know he's skin hooked. I mean, you might think you're hooked good, but when those big fish get to the boat and they're still green and they make that quick surge and they pull off, everyone's like, oh man, he pulled off.
Yeah.
But you know, if you thumb that spool and let him go, if you've barely got him skin hooked, you can still land those fish.
Right. Yeah. Well, that certainly is. But is there any recommendation? I mean, that's got to take a lot of practice to get good with that technique. Or
it's not really. I mean, after a little bit, it'll just come natural. I mean, when you get that, you know, 4 or 5 pound smallmouth to the boat, you're already anticipating he's going to make that hard run, so you're ready. Yeah,
yeah,
you're ready to go.
That's pretty well. That's what I see a lot of guys doing it. You hear them clicking and
yeah.
You know re-engaging the reel is always something that concerns me. You know, like
yeah,
you might skip or stutter because if the button wasn't depressed all the way, you know,
I haven't ever worried about that. You know, I guess the biggest concern would be if you don't put enough pressure on the spool and you let it free spool and backlash, then you're in a big time mess. But I've never had that happen, so you know, if it happens, I might rethink the process on it. But
can you imagine?
Yeah.
Riz, I mean, you got a 5-pound smallmouth, you click the button and you're not holding it.
Yeah.
And whoop, backlash occurs as you're releasing line.
Yeah.
And then pow, you got no drag.
You got nothing. You're
dead.
Yeah, you're dead.
I actually started doing that, clicking the button and fighting him. Not because I knew what I was doing, but because when I first started fishing, I watched guys like you do it, and I was like, wow, that looks really cool. And so I started doing it, and then, you know, I figured out that it is a pretty effective technique to let the fish kind of wind off and, you know, swim off a little bit. I don't fish a ton of swim baits, but, you know, crankbait, stuff like that, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Jerk bait fishing, I'll do it. It's definitely cool. But Rich on the message board, not me, a different Rich, wants to know, when you're fishing that way, Brian, do you focus more on parallel cast, or do you cast perpendicular to the bank and bring it back out to you?
That's a great question. How are you working that up the bank?
90% of the time, I'm 45 in the bank. And that's just because, I guess, when you're fishing the bank, like, I like to constantly throw ahead of the boat. Like, if I'm going down a straight bank, I'm going to be 45 in it. And when I pull out to a point, I may cast straight into the point or something like that. But I tend to go with that 45-degree angle just so you're kind of, your bait's in that strike zone a little bit longer than it would be if you were fishing just straight perpendicular to the banks. And I don't know if it really matters, because sometimes I don't think it does matter. I think it's just more personal preference.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it really depends, Rich, on what stage these fish are in, too.
Right.
You know, like, these are pre-spawn fish. And I notice about smallmouth is, man, they get up in the rocks.
Yeah, they'll get up there tight. And once you clue in what depth range those fish are using, you know, it might be better off to get up there in parallel. Like, say you're fishing a bank and you start out fishing it perpendicular and you notice all your bites are coming as soon as your bait hits the water. You might pull in there tight and fish, you know, parallel in that 3 to 4 feet of water. But the whole thing is, when you do that with a finesse swim bait presentation, the speed you have to wind that bait is, I want my bait falling while I'm retrieving it. I don't want it going up. I don't want it coming straight. I want it following the contour of a lake. So say if I'm fishing a bank that I'm setting in 12 feet of water and I'm making a 40-foot cast to the bank that is 2 feet of water, I want that bait to follow that slope of the lake all the way back to the boat till I determine what depth they're in. Because if you get up there in parallel in 3 feet of water and wind at that same speed, your bait's going to constantly be on the bottom. And you want it to be right up off the bottom.
Well, that's excellent. And, Rich, it's an excellent question. Are we giving away any of these lures up here?
Yeah, all that's giveaway.
All this is giveaway?
Yeah, look, we got the new D'Amici underspin head, the 4-inch swim bait here.
Well, I think
we're going to give Rich a D'Amici armor shad. You're
reading my mind. Yeah.
That's right.
There we go.
And by Rich, perfect. I mean both Riches.
That is Rich. So Rich is going to get 30 days extension, and he's going to get a set of D'Amici armor shads. So
I believe he earned them with that outstanding question.
That's a great question. And I think, you know, it's about how the fish, the pattern that the fish are in, because one of the great swim bait fishermen, Chris Zaldane, talks about different season, different patterns where he gets himself up shallow and throws out deep points.
Yeah.
And he works up the slope to trigger strikes in certain situations. But for this tournament, you know, it's all about getting it on the bank. Now, I've seen those big pre-spawn smallmouth. I mean, they're getting 6 inches of water sometimes.
Yeah.
They're up there eating and feeding on crawfish or yellow perch or whatever's available to them. And in another week or two, they're just going to be making beds.
Right.
So that's how you get to them with a little finesse. What are the color choices in that tournament?
I was throwing the flash shad, which I didn't have a pack of that, but I was throwing the PB silver and flash shad.
Mm-hmm.
When it was sunny and calm, and then when it got cloudy and, you know, overcast, I'd go to the white silver flake and the pearl white.
Okay.
So,
right, which one do I have here?
That is the PB silver.
Good golly, that's amazing.
It's beautiful.
Oh, my word.
good looking little swim baits. And smallmouth love to eat swim baits. Did you didn't catch any largemouth?
I caught a couple on spinnerbait the fourth day, but yeah, they didn't make the team.
Didn't make the team.
They didn't make the team.
That's
I weighed in 20 smallmouth.
No kidding.
Yep.
Man, it was a great win. Winning with smallmouth. And I guess it's always one there with smallmouth. The tournament I fished there. No, you know what? The tournament.
Largemouth usually.
Brent Ayler won the tournament with largemouth.
Yeah, and I think the previous year, Scott Martin won, and he won with a mixed bag, smallmouth and largemouth.
Okay.
So,
yeah, it's got giant smallmouth, but it was always the problem with us is that the 18-inch limit got in the way because you'd catch 3-pounders.
And have to throw them back.
Have to throw them back.
And I ran into that the first year we ever went to Cumberland, you know. I ended up finishing 11th or 12th, and the third day I didn't make the cut, but, you know, I probably caught 15 pounds of smallmouth, but I didn't have any over 18, so ended up weighing 10 pounds of spots.
Hey, Brian, I got a trivia question for you.
For me?
For you.
All right.
Which person in this room has beaten Scott Martin in the Scott Martin Challenge?
Ooh.
Yes.
I hadn't seen it, so it's going to be a total guess.
Yeah.
I'm going with you. How about that? That was kind of a gimme, though.
Yeah, that was a softball.
Loaded yeah, question.
That's a self-serving question if I ever heard one.
Forget about it.
How bad you beat him and where at? We need details.
Lake Ida, about 3 weeks ago, catching peacocks.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah, it was a good time. Yeah.
That would be fun. I hadn't got to go down there and catch the peacocks yet. I bet it's fun.
It looked awesome. You guys were putting the beat down.
Yeah.
I heard last winter it was real cold. I heard a lot of them didn't make it through the winter, but it's doing good. I mean,
we caught them. Good. It was only on the water for about 4 or 5 hours. So.
Oh, man.
But I managed to catch my first peacock and take Scott's hat right off his head.
That's awesome.
Made him sign it.
That's great. I fished the Scott Martin Challenge, and I didn't win because he cheated.
I've tried to fish it a couple of times. He's invited me, but it's like our schedules have never worked out. I could do it.
Yeah. So did he invite you right after you won a tournament, and did he invite you to do it on the same lake?
No.
Okay.
Suggesting Scott's looking for intel?
No, I'm not suggesting nothing. I might be saying something, but I ain't saying nothing.
I think you're saying something.
Yeah. Brian, what times do you choose to go with an underspin rather than a traditional jig head, and why?
Another.
I can't answer that question.
That's how good that question was.
That's when I've got one of them tied on, I've got both of them tied on. And since D'Amici came out with the underspin here in the last couple months, I've been throwing it a lot at our home lake, Moss Lake, and I go with just a jig head with the armor shad, and then I've had the underspin with the armor shad, and I've seen them bite the underspin a little better, but I think it's because we've been throwing a jig head on a swim bait for so many years. I think the fish are just accustomed to it, so by showing them a little something different with the underspin, I think we're kind of catching fresh fish that they haven't seen that underspin quite as often. So
where they've already been hooked by the other one,
perhaps,
right? Where they've already seen the swim bait. Everybody's throwing it, so you can just mix it up. I've got the underspin, got a little more flash. And
what about the wind?
The wind is. I could see the underspin outperforming a jig head just on a windy, cloudy day, but I still think they'll bite both. If they're biting one, I think they'll bite both.
Okay.
Well, the real answer to that question is when they're biting the underspin better, that's when you throw the underspin.
That is very true.
And who asked that question, Riz?
That question was from Showtime 99.
Showtime, hey, we got a pack of underspins.
Yeah, we're going to give them one.
We're going to be giving that to you.
Showtime 99, congratulations. You just bought some underspins.
This is a really cool underspin because it spins at such a slow retreat.
Right.
Like you can crawl it and that blade's still spinning.
What's your go-to size overall? 3/8?
3/8 on the underspin with the 4-inch armor shad. That's my standard go-to if I'm going anywhere for the first time, with limited information. That's what I'm going to have tied on. Usually it's going to be this 3/8. I don't know. I guess they call that natural. Yeah, the natural color, just a lead head. And I've start out with a Tennessee shad or PB silver 4-inch armor shad. That's my go-to. That's my bread and butter.
Well, other than dominating $100,000 tournaments with finesse swim bait, when else do we use swim baits? What are some of the seasonal patterns or types of lakes or places you throw these guys?
I don't know that I have backed my boat in the lake in the last 5 years. I've not had this tied on.
No kid.
Year round.
Wow.
Year round. It's definitely a year round bait, and it catches big fish year round. I mean, it may not be it may not be the best bait all the time, but it'll definitely get you a couple extra bites every day all year long.
I remember hearing something, or maybe it was one of our classes, about you throw this in replace of a shaky head.
I do a lot.
Has it replaced the shaky head for you?
It has a lot. Like a lot of the places that, like I've got a buddy I showed this deal to a couple years ago, and he nicknamed it the cleanup man. He's that's the 4-inch armor shad. It's the cleanup man.
Yeah. So,
And you'll throw that exposed hook no matter what. Well, in brush piles, you got to make an adjustment there. No.
If I touch the brush and get hung, I break it off and tie another one.
No kidding.
Yep.
That exposed hook is just too important.
Yeah, it's very important. Right. It's you don't break off as much as you would think, especially when you get your wind speed down right. I mean, if you know where the top of that brush is and where the brush is setting, you know, you want to get the bait close to it but not in it. But right. Sometimes, you know, you let it sink too deep or something like that and it happens. But that's part of fishing. I mean, it's no different than throwing a jig or a shaky head in a brush pile and getting stuck in the fork of a limb, breaking it off.
Right.
I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, 12 months a year. Throwing finesse swim baits. What do you got, Riz?
That's right. We have a few questions here on the message board, but I'm going to go with one that's a little bit different, and I'm going to open it up to both you guys. The question is actually coming from Guest. So, Guest, please send in your customer number. It's at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And the question is, when you're fishing a summer tournament, have you ever pre-filled your live well with anything before you head to the lake, like ice or cooler water, or do you always just wait till you get to the lake and fill up the live well there?
That's a great question. And, I'll tell you what I do, and you can take it next, Brian. But a lot of times in the heat, like I did it when I was down in Tennessee, is I want to keep a lot of ice in the boat. And what I'll do is I'll start out with ice in the live wells themselves, and I lower the water temperature right away, especially because it was stinking hot. It was like 98 degrees, and I was having a hard time with my fish management. So I started out with cool water in my live well. And normally I don't do that, but in extreme conditions, that's what I do. Mostly I carry ice around in the boat. I carry G-Juice. It's really important when you're using ice to use something like G-Juice, because it offsets the chlorine in the ice.
Chemicals in the water when it melts. Right,
exactly.
Yep.
So that's what I do. But fish management's a tricky business. G-Juice really helps. What do you do?
Yeah, I do the same thing. The only thing I would add to that is when I fish a true summertime tournament, you know, where you've got highs in the mid-90s, upper 90s, fill your live well up at daylight. When you stop at the gas station, buy two bags of ice, put both bags in your live well, put it on recirc where it won't drain out when it melts, and fill your live well up as soon as you back your boat in. When that surface temp is the coolest it's going to be all day, go ahead and put G-Juice in there early in the morning, right at daylight. So the surface temp might be, you know, 82 at daylight, but at 12 o'clock, the surface temp's going to be 87, 88 degrees possibly. So put that cool water, cool early morning water in there. You already got your G-Juice in there. You've already got ice in there. And if you leave that live well on recirc, it's going to stay, you know, 73, 74 degrees all day long. You never have to change the water up.
What about the jinx of preparing to get by filling your live well? You're preparing for a big stringer of fish and there's jinxing yourself.
Who believes in that? That's like catching one on the first cast. You know, I hope I catch an 8-pounder on the first cast every tournament.
Do you have any superstitions?
Not that I know of. I mean, I may, but I can't think of anything that's... No, I don't really...
Mike wears the same underwear for 2 weeks at a time. You know? I don't know about you guys. You got any superstitions, BTC?
No.
Keep your fingers crossed that the video will play.
That's correct. Yeah. Superstitions? Nah, not at all.
No, I don't either.
I don't think so either.
No, because I'll catch a fish on a bait and change the color.
That's the way I am too.
Yeah, I'm kind of like the complete opposite.
Really?
Yeah.
You do that too?
I change baits a lot. I mean, not until I catch one though. Like, right. See, when I go to practice for an event, like, I've probably got, you know, 35 Fitzgerald rods rigged up in the rod box right now headed to Champlain, and I will not cut one single one of those baits off until I catch a fish.
Whoa!
That's a superstition.
But, no, it's...
strategy.
My mind, like, I know that if I get around one, they're going to bite this. So if I find some fish, that's when I'll cut that bait off, tie something else on, to find out what they won't bite. So if I go into the tournament knowing what they won't bite, I'm good. I know what not to do during the tournament.
I like it, man.
Reverse stretch. I like it. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I heard you like to keep a lot of rods on the deck of your boat during practice. You said the first thing you do is you take the rod strap holder on your Rangers move it over 3 inches to accommodate more rods.
Yeah. Yeah, I get my new boat and I just unscrew where the buckle straps and slide it over on each side. So I think I can fit probably 28 rods on the deck.
Now, that sounds sexy, but you go to grab your crankbait rod. The crankbait's tied up in your swimbait rod and wrapped around the braid, which is impossible to deal with. How do you deal with all that?
Yeah, that's kind of aggravating, but you make it work. I'd rather untangle it than I had to dig in the box and tie something else on it, so I deal with it.
I agree with that, too.
I have 5 rods on the deck of the boat, and all 5 of them, I want to get to the shaky head rod, and I can't because it's in the mix. You got to stop what you're doing and get them on.
It's worse when you're fishing a local tournament or something, or fun fishing, and you've got, like, 2 Alabama rigs on the deck, too. That's when it gets bad.
That is bad. Or the drop shot. That's why I hate the drop shot.
That
weight wraps around everything, and now you're stuck. You got to.
But now the new Revo reels have got the little drop shot keeper on the side of them, so you don't have to worry about
that. But that's good, except for the fact that every time I grab that rod now, I get impaled with the drop shot because it's now exposed. So I'm screwed either way.
Why are you so negative?
I don't know.
Always negative.
This is why.
Look at the positive. Look at the positive.
The no drop shot weight to worry about.
I could use more positivity.
Pete,
what do you got?
One more thing. Sorry. You know what? We're going to talk about this later. I'll wait.
Okay.
Yeah. Never mind.
I got one more question. From the message board before we dive into something else. Tim would like to know, what are your line management techniques and how often do you change out your line?
Great question, Tim.
I change line a lot. Like, I go through a lot of line, and it's not because there's anything wrong with it. I think it's my OCD kicking in. my general rule of thumb is when I'm back home fun fishing, I don't change it a lot, but before I leave to go to an event, like for practice, I put new line on for practice because I want that reel to perform and the line to perform just like it would in the tournament, which I'm going to have new line on. And then before the first day of the tournament, I'll change line on everything I've used during practice. And then during the event, if my general rule is, if I fish with it for more than 30 minutes, I'm going to change line for the next day of the event.
Wow.
I change the line a lot, but
there's
a lot of factors. It's not because I'm scared the line's weak or got bad places in it, but throughout the course of a day, we'll use the finesse swim bait deal for an example. I'm throwing it on 8-pound P-Line tactical fluorocarbon, and like I said, I may break off 20 or 25 jig heads in a day, and throughout the course of retying and breaking off, you've lost a good bit of line on your spool, and it gets to the shallower your line gets on your spool, the less distance you can cast. So for optimum casting distance, I want to keep that spool full, and I want to start that day with a full spool of line.
And a full spool or an empty spool also changes your retrieve speed.
Yeah, change your gear ratio. I mean, you're not utilizing the full potential of the reel.
Right. Boy, that's a lot of spooling, man.
It's a lot of spooling and a lot of time.
Until midnight.
Night. See, the beauty of FLW is we have the off limits day right before the event. So you're not stressed out. You're not tired. You've got all day to work on your tackle. Yeah. And then the first day of the event is, I absolutely love having that off limits day.
That is the best thing.
That's the best thing ever happened
in a tournament.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you look at every other sport. I mean, football players don't practice the day before game.
Yeah.
I mean, Why would you do that to yourself? I mean, you want to be rested. You want your mind focused.
Yes.
So, same thing in bass fishing.
I agree. FLW, when I fished the FLW, they put that rule into place, and it was amazing. You got to sleep in. You're rested. Your body's rejuvenated.
Right.
Mentally, you got...
Not only are you rested, but the lake has had 150 boats on it for 3 days of practice, And now it lets those fish set back up. There's not as many boats out on the water, so
yeah.
It lets the fish reposition and get back where they want to be, and it makes the first day, you know, just it, you go out with more of an open mind, like,
yeah.
And there's a kind of a element of surprise, because you don't know what's changed on that off limits day, so you kind of get out there and you're like, oh man, you know, I didn't catch nothing but little ones here, but you know, that off limits day, maybe some big fish moved in or something like that.
Because yeah, you're optimistic, and right. I'm pessimistic. I think they're gone. There'll be even less fish there now that we've been waiting. But I'm overfishing on the Bassmasters now, and here's the problem that I have is I incorporated the off limits day into my practice.
I do the same for the coast.
I go a day early so that I can still get my 3 full days of practice.
Yep.
And then I get the day off. But here's what's happened to me. This is my OCD. I get through my 3 days of practice, and I didn't find enough. And I'm like, son of a. Now I've got to go out and practice.
On your off limits. On your self-imposed off limits.
On my off limits day. Because my anxiety gets to me, and I'm like, they're not big enough. I'm not on a winning fish. I got to keep going. Everybody else is going out. I can't sit here and work on my tackle. How do I get over that?
You got to go with the mind frame that everybody else is beating their fish up, and your fish are going to be good because you're not beating them up.
Yeah. Positivity.
How can you think that? What? I would think they're out there hooking my fish.
Nah.
Right?
How do you get over just not wanting to be out on the lake?
Oh, I want to be out there. It's just, but I want to make sure I'm prepared for every situation I may run into the first day of the event.
Like, that's what I struggle with, like, and I don't fish anything like you guys do, but, you know, I fish the fed stuff, and I feel like if I don't stay out on the lake until the sun is literally going down and I'm not out there as the sun is coming up, I feel like I'm leaving something up to chance, you know, and I'm not taking control of what I have to do. And oftentimes on the tournament day, I'm tired as all get out, you know, because
that's the price you paid. All right, there's the balance.
Yeah, and then your hook set's a half second slower, and you got to run to the back deck to get a hook in them. Yeah.
All right, we're getting somewhere.
Now, what I find is that that off day is so phenomenal mentally.
Yeah.
What you're doing now is you're thinking about what you found at practice, and even though you're not on the water, you're thinking about what could go different, how the fish could move, what could change.
I've heard Mike say this about the fishing MLF now, because they have those off days in between days, and mm-hmm. you know, I've heard a lot of guys actually say that.
Yeah,
about that effect of not going back to back to back to back to back.
Yeah, it's tremendous. I mean, your gear is tight.
That's kind of neat.
Like, you might have a reel that you've been wanting to replace because it's, you know, so you replace it. You got some line to spool. You got your boat, which is a very important part of this game, is, you know, you maintenance your boat, you fill your oil up, you know, everything is tight, you know. It's when you're rough water, it's huge, because you can go around your boat
and tighten everything up. Check everything out.
You know, check everything. So your breakdowns are less, you're mentally stronger, you're physically stronger. But I still, like I said, if I have a crummy practice round, I still find myself forcing myself out on that practice day, which I need to get over. But kudos again to FLW for incorporating that off limits day. That's a great deal.
It is.
And you're enjoying some success over there, once again this year.
Yes, it's been another good year. I mean, I don't know. It's weird because it's been a good year. I think I'm in 7th in the points right now, but I feel like it hadn't been that good of a year. I don't know. It's kind of, I think, and it's all stemmed from that one event at Seminole. Just Seminole, strangled Seminole, if I can get my hands around it. But it's like that. I finished like 130-something. It's the worst event I've had in a while. But, you know, it's like I'm mentally, that's defining my whole season.
Right.
And it's hard for me to get over that.
Because if you finish middle of the pack, you're leading.
I'm leading angler of the year.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, are you within striking distance?
No, I don't feel like I am.
Okay.
No.
It's mathematically possible.
Mathematically possible, but not possible.
Yeah. No, that's a great season. And
yeah, I mean, it's been good. I've had 2 top 10s. And I think another thing that's weighing on me as far as, you know, it not being – to me it doesn't feel like a good season is because I had two chances to win and I didn't win either one of them. And that's kind of bothering me too.
Now, let's go through that process a little bit. Now, when you say you had a chance to win, talk me through it. Did bad decisions or mechanical failures or what happened?
One was out of my control. Like, I'm not going to say I had a chance to win that one, but I feel like I did because I was only like 2.5 pounds out of winning at Rayburn. I think I lost by 2.5 pounds, but you know, it's like you're so close. I ended up finishing third, and you feel like you let it slip away, even though nothing happened, no right. mechanical failures, no lost fish, no missed bites, but I just feel like, you know, I should have got one more bite, you know, if I'd have fished something a little bit different and got one more bite, I could have won. And then at Grand this year, you know, I went into the fourth day with like a 4.5 pound lead and caught one bass, finished seventh. So that one I blew. That was my fault. But I don't know what I did wrong, and I don't know what I would do different. It just didn't work out. And, you know, that's everybody, you hear people say a lot when they win, you know, it's something that you can't force. It just happens. Like, when it happens, you can't stop it. And, you know, that's the truth. Like, when you win an event and you look back, there's like, you know, there's no way I was not going to win that event.
Right.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I see that, and I agree with it wholeheartedly. I saw we had B-Lad in here last night, and he won on Seminole.
Yeah, he won on Seminole.
And he had disaster on day four.
Yeah.
Lost giants, like three giants.
Yeah, and still won and by still a fair won. Margin. Right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, when you're going to win, you can't screw it up.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
You just got to show up.
Yeah, you just got to show up.
Even with a bad attitude.
Even with a bad attitude.
Well, how do you keep your good attitude? Do you have a traveling partner? Who are you running around with?
I travel kind of by myself, like as far as driving on the road. But this year, me and Chad Grigsby and Buddy Gross and Ron Nelson have stayed together at a lot of the events. And actually, my family's flying up to Champlain, so nice to have them there because, you know, my wife and son used to travel with me to all the events until he started school. And so they don't get to travel as much as they used to. So I'm excited to have them up here at Champlain next week.
Excellent. Excellent. You guys doing the house rental thing?
Yeah. We rented a house and, It's always fun. It's so pretty up there. There's so much for the family to do, and it's a good place to be.
Well, I mean, and it's beautiful up there. I hope you guys have a great time. I'd love to. We're gonna be up there filming with Ike pretty soon.
Really? But
yeah, for Bass University bucket list, we're planning a Ike and Ellie filming session up in Champlain. So you guys can look for that.
Yeah, we'll be there.
I'll be looking forward. I'm looking forward to not getting invited to that one, too.
Yeah, I don't guess I'm invited either. Right? I don't know, Brian. Maybe just the Brians are out. I don't know.
I know I always am.
Well, bringing me down, man. Jeez. Now you're traveling still with these guys. Now, you know, I know what it's like to travel with guys because all the fishermen lie. And do you guys share information? Do you guys honest with each other?
Yeah, we're honest with each other. I mean, we get along together, good together, and everything just goes good together.
Man, that's awesome. Keeping that positive mental attitude when you're out there trying to compete, because this sport can kick you right in the teeth.
Yeah, it sure can. I mean, but you know, the good thing about it is when it does kick you in the teeth, can't be mad at nobody else.
Yeah.
You know, if I don't do like Seminole, I didn't do good, but, you know, it's my fault. I get mad at myself, and then Allie has to give me a pep talk and get me back straight.
Yeah. Well, I bring Brian Carpenter most of the time when I don't do good. For bringing me down.
What are we, hour 43 minutes in? I just realized I had two eyes in thrift on the screen here. I just fixed it.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Well done. Well done. When you get old.
Speaking of which, I think it might be time for a trivia question.
Yeah, well, we're going to actually incorporate a new game into the Bass University Live segments. Uh-oh. Are you guys ready for this?
I don't know.
The new game is going to be called What Got 'Em. Okay?
Got 'Em.
So, Brian, I am going to present a picture on the screen. Well, going to present a picture on the screen. And what you're going to do is you're going to tell us what lake and what time of year. And our viewers are going to have to chime in on the message board and tell us what technique got 'em.
All right. All right. This is a long time ago. Oh, my goodness.
I can see that.
Look at me.
Look at that.
Just look at you. Look at you go.
Yeah. That was on Lake Okeechobee.
Yeah.
Florida bass. You could tell.
Yeah. Sure, look how caught them. I believe it was January when we were there.
So the picture on
Okeechobee,
the screen is
January.
Yep. Lake Okeechobee in January. Chime in on the message board, guys. Let us know what got them.
I suspect we may have been talking about that earlier.
And we have a winner.
He's trying to give it away again.
We have a winner, Mike P. And the answer is, go ahead, Brian, tell us.
Chatterbait. That was the first ever professional tournament I entered at Lake Okeechobee.
Wow.
Yes.
Now, that's just crazy. Nobody wins their first tournament.
My first tournament as a pro. And I'll never forget, because Bobby Lane finished second. And I remember him congratulating after me. And I'm like, you know, Bobby, he had been fishing for quite a while. I'm like, oh, man, this is awesome.
Yeah. And
won my first event.
Yeah, Bobby's great. He's a great, great guy and a great instructor for Bass U. We've done a lot of work with Bobby down there in Florida. And he's a master in Florida. Now, did you jump in that tournament because you were catching him on a chatterbait?
No, the previous year was the first time I'd ever been to Okeechobee, and I fished as a co-angler. And I fished co-anglers 1 year in the Costa Series, and then the next year I decided I was going to fish as a pro.
Wow. And they were chomping that chatterbait.
It was pretty good.
Where were you fishing up north, down south?
I was fishing, actually, the lake was really high back then, and I caught them all in monkey box.
In the monkey box?
Yeah. Or Moonshine Bay monkey box.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the first. I don't know if that was the first time Okeechobee bass had seen a chatterbait, but it was pretty good. I mean, I didn't
imagine what that's like. Yeah. Being the guy that's showing these fish that number one bait for the first time.
Yeah. And, you know, I was still, I'm a rookie. Like, I'd never really traveled anywhere in fishing. And I wish I could redo that tournament, because I know this is going to sound far fetched, but the first day of that event, I weighed in five that weighed, 19 and a half or something, right at 20 pounds. But I had 2 8-pounders and 3 12-inchers. Huh. And I lost 3 that day. And I think it's just to the rod and reel setup and line or just bad luck. But in my mind, I feel like I could have had the 5-fish limit record.
No kidding.
If I would have caught the 5 biggest bites.
They
I had
were that
day.
Big.
Yeah.
10-pounder.
I don't know. And it might have been nerves, you know.
Yeah.
Because I've never traveled. I've never caught a lot of big fish. But,
yeah.
I mean, they could have just all 3 been 8-pounders and I'd had 40. But
wow.
They were big. It was big.
Man, that's pretty awesome.
Brian, what was your trailer back then for the chatterbait?
Back then, I was throwing a Zoom Speed Crawl.
Yeah.
That's what everybody,
Zoom Speed Crawl.
That's why we were all throwing it.
Yes, it is.
How about that?
You showed us how to
that's
do
still
that.
A great trailer.
Yeah, it is a good trailer. I was throwing, I'd throw it a lot, and then when the Zoom Ultra Vibe Chunk come out, we used it some too.
Gotcha.
Now what are you throwing?
Now I mostly throw a Damiki Armor Shad, or if I want something kicky, I'll still throw the Speed Crawl some, and depends on how much vibration I want. I mean, versus my train of thought is if I'm fishing deeper, I go with a shad shaped body like the Armor Shad or the Fluke or something like that. And if I want something kicky, I'll throw like a Strike King, the little Rage Crawl or something, this Ultra Vibe Crawl, something like that. There's so many different trailers out there now that are great. I mean, you can really pick your poison on just whatever your personal favorite is.
Well, that was amazing. We all were throwing it. I can't believe you gave it up. You gave up the goods and told everybody. You might have held that for another year or two.
It would have got out.
Yeah.
And it, you know what? That was kind of the start of my sponsorship deal, too.
Is that right?
Yeah, because actually, Ron and them made so much money off that chatterbait, they sponsored me the next year on tour. So
no kidding.
It worked out good.
It did work out good for you.
Yes.
Who won that, Rich?
That was Mike P.
Mike P.
Yep.
We're gonna be
Mike P won a TH Marine Gen 2 culling system.
All right. We got another one ready to go?
Well, we were thinking about taking a quick commercial break.
Okay.
And then we're thinking about trying to get this video to play.
Okay.
And we're still thinking about that.
Are you still thinking about that?
So we need to keep... Stall.
Well, all right, let's take a quick one. Take a quick break.
As soon as we get this.
Oh, so you got to get the video playing first before we can take the break.
That's the part. All right, I think we're about ready.
I got you.
We got the video that won't play for some reason. So.
I got you.
So we're adjusting on the fly, but we're about ready, Pete.
Okay. Well, we got Champlain coming up for you, man. I really wish I was going. I know we all wish we were going up there. And we're going to wish you the best of luck. Looks like we got the video up and running here. Right. And you're not allowed to talk about Champlain anyway.
No, I can talk about it. Y'all just can't talk about it. Or I can't listen to y'all talk about it.
It's public.
So, well, it's break time. I can step out.
Hey, we're going to be right back in a few minutes. Go get subscribed to BassU.TV. It's 30 days free right now. Go check it out. Come on over. We're going to be giving away some of these big prizes next. Go get subscribed, guys. We'll be right back with more Brian Thrift after this.